Welcome back. This is episode number 274. Today I'm talking to Manuel Pisner. He is the founder and CEO of not one, but two companies. They are Bright Solutions and Flash Hub. Manuel is based in Germany and he specializes in building remote teams and getting work done for companies in a fast and efficient way using optimized processes and project management skills that he has. So I had a really interesting conversation with Manuel about that. Manuel has actually given a TEDx talk on the TEDx stage about this very same thing. So I started the conversation by asking Manuel about that TEDx talk and the messages in it. If you want any of the show notes, as always, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/274. Enjoy. This podcast is brought to you by Payoneer, the leading global B2B payment solution for the outsourcing industry. If you're a BPO or freelancer or have outsourced staffing, then Payoneer makes sending and receiving international payments super simple, quick, secure, and of course, low cost. They have some fantastic features which have been designed specifically for the needs of this industry. You can easily manage payments between your clients, staff and suppliers across multiple currencies and international bank accounts. Payoneer help make outsourcing easy, so consider them now. And if your BPO, clients or suppliers aren't already using Payoneer, then ask them why not. For a limited time, Payoneer is offering a $50 bonus if you sign up now. So go to register.payoneer.com/OA. Or go to our website and we will have links there.
So what I did is I started as an entrepreneur in 2006. I started basically as a freelancer in software development and I ever dreamed of having an own business. I started my own business in 2011 and I've grown that business, which was an agency focusing on web development and app development. I've grown this agency to 43 people till the end of 2017. And I realized that the dream was not that shiny and bright than I ever hoped, because pressure was always increasing continuously. And pressure was increasing because it is so hard to find local people that work in your office that are really experts. And on the other side, it's so hard to deal with ever-increasing complexity in digital projects. And what I realized is that in my agency, I always have either too many projects or too many people, and that was always a huge pressure. And that this led me to a situation where I had one project that was almost about to fail. It really crashed on my desk, where we had to migrate 8,000 web pages. And I tried this with a local team, with local partners. I tried it with nearshoring, with an agency. I tried it with an offshoring agency. And everything failed, and I was always highly disappointed, because what happened is I had an account manager, and this person always promised me everything, made me feel well, and I had no transparency what's happening behind, and I had no control about those people that he employed for my project. And all of a sudden, in the first case with this nearshoring company, they canceled my project but 3.5 weeks before the deadline. And in the case of this offshoring company, they canceled it even one day before the deadline. And I was highly disappointed. I had no idea how to save this project and my company. And what happened then is that I read studies about virtual teams that were issued by the Stanford University. They are called Flash Organizations and Flash Teams. And there is another one called Dream Teams. And they described how organizations can leverage global freelancers and organize them in virtual teams or even virtual organizations to get a huge amount of workload done in a short time, or even to scale a workforce for complex projects like Scrum projects, software development, etc. And then there happened many, many happy, lucky things, because I found a project manager that knew other recruiters, and I found them on a freelance talent platform. And they were able to staff me a virtual team within one day, 23 freelancers from really all around the globe. And the exciting thing is that everyone committed to working 14 hours every day, even over the weekend. And instead of feeling helpless and frustrated and having intransparency and no control the first time, I realized, wow, there are people all around the globe that can really help me when I need them. They are there whenever I need them. I can scale with them. And they were even happy to do this job because they decided by themselves if they want to do this kind of work or not. Yeah, and with this system, I was able to deliver my project to the client on Monday after 4 days, and everything was, yeah, saved. And at this point, I realized that, yeah, work and my agency can be different and will be different. So I started to rebuild everything. Yeah, I had to fire like 20 people and 10 left by themselves. So right now we are only 12. But what we are able to do is to do any kind of complex projects with any technology, from marketing to software development and whatever comes, because we can find the right people from anywhere in the world and, yeah, compose them to a virtual team that does this project or regular operations. This was the story of Bright Solutions. And from this experience, I founded Flash Hub because I want to help other organizations to scale systematically and reliably with virtual teams and avoid these kind of experience that I had in the negative way, but have this positive experience of, yeah, work without limits, no local restrictions and limitations of their workforce, and truly scale. That's my experience that I have had in the last 3 years.
And it's incredible, isn't it? You know, and obviously we talk a lot about offshoring and outsourcing in this podcast, and you are bringing a different angle, a different service to the table, and it's about creating, you know, teams that can get work done as needed, when needed, and you know, it's just as we see technology develop and the sort of the workforce economy develop, there's just so many different opportunities of managing your teams and your resources, and you know, it's no surprise that, you know, you found this solution for your Bright Solutions issue. And then, you know, it seems that you've done an incredible pivot and you're just completely sold on this, because it's the power of these services, isn't it? They're just kind of almost life-changing, and you want to get that out into the community and tell more people about it.
Absolutely. And I realized that it's not offshoring or nearshoring or agencies that deliver poor performance. And I don't want to put a negative spotlight on these, but where I want to be aware, where I want people to be aware, is that you need to make sure that you have transparency and control. And you don't have transparency and control if there is a single point of failure, like one person that managed everything for you and just has the job to, yeah, make you feel well and sell those people in the background that are right now available. And this is not what I needed. And that was the real problem that I had. Nowadays, I realize that it doesn't matter if you have people offshore, nearshore, freelancers, locally, you need to create a proper system that is transparent and gives you control about what happens. I'm not talking about controlling people. I'm talking about controlling the outcomes, the results. And that's what gives you the power to control your organization and your workforce.
And it's critically important, isn't it? Because it's not just about having bums on seats, as they say. It's not just about having people. It's about getting those people up to skill, having them do or capable of doing the tasks that you need, and then having the processes in place so that they are effectively, you know, carrying out those tasks. Is that right? Is that what Flash Hub does? You effectively create these systems and structures that enable companies to access resources that they wouldn't necessarily know how to access themselves.
Yeah, it's not only the access, because you can get people from different platforms like Upwork, Fiverr, Guru, Freelancer.com. You can get people dedicated as nearshoring teams, as offshoring teams. So getting people is currently served by providers like you are, and they do that well, and I can't do this better. But what I can help organizations with, and that's what we are doing with Flash Hub, is to provide them the right tools and the right structures and change the way how they work so that they can leverage this global workforce. This is what we are doing with Flash Hub.
Yeah. And, you know, so the remote thing has been happening a while now, you know, decentralized workforces and virtual teams. What do you see as being the issue, why this isn't being more universally embraced by companies?
Because they are used to the old way. I mean, they are used to work how they worked since the last like 50 or even 100 years. They think work can only be successful when they have their workforce that they can see and basically control physically. That's why so many people commute from one city to another, like 1 or even 2 hours every day, just to go to an office, sit there at a computer, and then do work at the computer. And this computer, they basically have in their pocket with their smartphone or even at home twice in most households. So there is, from my perspective, there is no sense anymore working as most organizations work today. We have the technology and we have everything that helps us to work differently. We just don't use it in the right way. We still ask our people to come to the office every day, and because managers, they need to feel control. If they have a distributed workforce and that happens from one day to another, they simply lose control, or they feel as they would lose control. And as most organizations are highly hierarchical still, and they work not in a real agile way and cooperative, but in these hierarchical structures, they more like work with command and reaction. And this is hard to do if you have a distributed workforce. And this is because most people in these organizations fear failure. They fear failure because if they make failures, they get blamed by the person that commands or manages them. That's why everyone avoids risk and failure. But failure is the biggest thing and the biggest driver for process. So pain and reflection equals progress, right? This is the formula. And in most organizations, failure is avoided. That's why they still work as they worked like 100 years ago. And that's why they think work can only be successful if it continues like this. And if you now bring the vision to them that they can scale their workforce globally with people they don't know, people they never saw, people that are not even in their country, then they fear, again, here's the fear, that they lose control. They get blamed in the organization because they tried something new and this didn't work out. So, I think this structure, how organizations work today, is preventing them from trying such new things that are really a large opportunity for them.
It's a brave new world, isn't it? And how do you see the differentiation between long-term ongoing roles versus the project-based work? And is that what I'm getting from Flash Hub, in that, you know, it's let's bring on 100 people to get this project done, blitz it, do it to a high standard, and then the team dissipates again? Is that the sort of the niche angle and value add?
That was the origin. That was the use case when Flash Hub was founded, when I had my own problems and I need a huge workforce to scale to get my project done. But now I realize that most organizations that start with a virtual team, no matter if those people are just freelancers or dedicated on an offshore office, nearshore office, or even in a local office, what I see is that organizations try to transform to a virtual workforce, to a remote workforce, to escape from the local war of talent. And it is not even that. So the trigger usually is, I have a huge amount of workload, I have a project, but I have nobody who can get this project done. This is the usual initial trigger. And once they see that they have successful experiences with this kind of work, they consider it for other parts of their organization. for example, if they completed a software development project successfully, then they consider the operations handed over to a virtual team. And then, for example, somebody else in the organization sees this positive experience and tries to adapt. And then we also build virtual teams that operate over a constant amount of time, like a year or two, or I have not more experience than 2 years with that. But I see a shift from a project-based work to a continuous operation and continuous engagement.
And where do you see the future trends in terms of, you know, there's been a lot in the newspapers at the moment about the gig economy. There's resistance to that, certainly in California. I think some laws have been passed in terms of people's rights, employment rights not being protected with the gig economy. Do you see this as a generalized trend towards people working in environments where the requirement is turned on, turned off, turned on, and then the people just respond to that? Or do you just see this as a sort of, just one aspect to employment? Is it sort of all or nothing? This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you're already outsourcing, about to start, or somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your outsourcing practices. We list over 700 outsourcing suppliers on our website, host this leading outsourcing podcast, and have over 5,000 pages of content. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. We offer everything from light brokerage, co-managed services, through to fully managed solutions. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Mention that you're a podcast listener, and we will give you special attention plus a 10% discount. This is for a limited time only. Go to outsourceaccelerator.com/quote.
Yeah, that's a complex question. So let me start with two different kind of people. There are people that love freedom and flexibility, and there are people that love safety and their daily routines and their having those people that they know around them every day. So these are two different kind of people. Ask all these 500 freelancers that we engaged over the last 2.5 years if they are happy with their job. And I think 99% they really love it, because they choose by themselves when they work, how much they work, with whom they work, and where they work. So they are self-determined and they are free in their decision. That's what they choose and that's what they like. So why should we not allow them to do this? And why should we not allow organizations to integrate and engage with them? On the other side, there are people that don't want this. They need stability. They don't want this flexibility. They want always the same routines. They want safety. And they value this more than the lifestyle of flexibility and being independent, etc. So for these kind of people, there must be the classical way of employment. And this is not good or bad. It is both as it is. And I think there should be a system that helps both people to work in the way they want. From an organizational perspective, I see that not only projects, but work itself is getting more complex every month. So when I look back, when I started with software development, it was okay just to be a backend developer, and you can get a huge amount of work done for a customer that will be happy with the result. Nowadays, that's by far not enough. You can't just develop backend software, because you need backend, you need frontend, then you need DevOps for different cloud platforms, you need user experience design, you need automated tests, and it's getting more complex every day, even with different frameworks in all these specific subjects. And that's where I think the gig economy is a huge opportunity to be able to test fast what really works, also to fail fast and then pivot and try something different. And once you see what really works, and when I say what really works, I mean which kind of skills you need, how they should work, with which tools, with which workflows, then you can try to find somebody that is a full-time employee if this process is a continuous process that gets operated over like a long period of time. What I had in the past is that I had this this dynamic in our projects. I always had them, and it's increasing every year. So when I was a local organization and I hired local employees that should deal with these continuous changes and with these dynamics, they always had to learn something different, and they were always pushed into another thing they didn't know. So I hired a software developer, then this person should go into a project and should do DevOps engineering in a cloud platform because there was nobody else. And then this person should also do quality assurance and a little bit of user experience design. And then this role polluted, and we had a role pollution or role creep, and the person itself was not happy anymore because she didn't do the work that she liked. And the other stakeholders were not happy and satisfied with this person anymore because results were not as good as they were initially. And that's where I think the gig economy is a huge opportunity to get these spikes of complexity and workload covered, and then understand better what works, and then find somebody who can execute this over a long period of time stably.
The key to all this really is having successful project management and process management, isn't it? And I think the reason why most things fall down is because of the execution and potentially the sort of ideas that are fueling that execution. But you know, I look at sort of big civil engineering projects. If a bridge gets built, or buildings get built, or the Olympics facilities get built, you know, these things are run by world experts, but inevitably they are over budget, they are delivered late, and I think it brings into the spotlight how difficult it is to run complex projects. And when there's so many different moving parts, so many different people, so many dependencies, then it is so easy for these things to go wrong. So you obviously bring a lot of value into these processes by using, you know, some of the processes to ensure better results. What are some of those that you rely on?
There are typically three kind of these processes. We have waterfall projects if clients demand this. So you have the typical planning, and then you have the execution, and then you test it, hand it over, and then you maybe have some bug fixes and it's done. These are typically not those projects that my heart beats for, because they are not so successful as they can be. Because what happens? Okay, you plan, but you still know you can't plan a complex software project from the beginning. It's simply not possible. But people assume it is. So they do it, then they fail, then they blame, and they are disappointed. That's the old kind of working when things were not that complex as they are today. This can work like for planning an event or doing some straightforward work. But the process that we are relying heavily on is Scrum, which is a framework for doing agile projects. And when I say agile projects, it comes to my mind that most people think, okay, agile, we don't have to plan, we don't have processes, it's just a creative process where people collaborate, but this will not work. They still need a structure. Even if you have highly creative work, it needs a structure how the creativity of everyone in the team contributes to each other. And Scrum is a framework that is very clear. It's clearly structured. It has clear habits, clear rhythms of meetings. It has clear values with the Agile Manifest. It also has clear, very clear role descriptions and how those individuals interact with each other. And that brings agility with a system, and not agility by accident. So this is what we rely on mostly. And then there is another thing which is called Kanban. Kanban is also meant to be an agile framework, but more for the operations, not for continuous projects where you want to improve complex things over a long period of time, but where you have like support, customer support or software support. Basically these things are handled by Kanban.
So when you aggregate all that together, you know, do you sometimes see that people engage in remote work or, you know, offshoring and it doesn't work, and they're blaming the fact that they have offshore? You know, how do you split out the causation between it necessarily being the resources or how they run the project?
Yes, I experienced that very often, and I experienced that by myself. So I had the scenario where I had a marketing team, and they were all experts in marketing strategy, performance marketing, social media marketing, etc. And they were doing these things pretty well, but the result was still almost no leads. And I was wondering why this is. And then I jumped into how they are working, and I saw that they simply miss the structure, the guidance of a framework like Scrum or Kanban, whatever it is. But to produce a real result, you need to do things on a continuous basis. I'm not saying you need to do the same things every day, but you need to focus on what matters every day. So, for example, we have a daily Scrum meeting. And if I look at all our virtual teams, at the time when I didn't introduce this clear framework with checklists and so everything was structured, then they had every team had a different daily Scrum meeting, completely different. But on the other side, the Scrum meeting has one purpose. It is to identify blockers and commit on what gets done today. This is the only purpose of the daily Scrum meeting. But if you have just a social conversation during this meeting, this will not contribute to the result. So when we introduce these checklists and structures so that people get guided well, I realized the result is much better because every individual can really focus on their specific subject where they are an expert and the subject where they match their skills. But the structure puts every piece together so that the result will be delivered. And before we had this, I was also about to blame a performance marketing expert that he's not able to manage the team. And that is right. He's not able to manage the team, but he's a performance marketing expert, not a team leader or team manager or scrum master or whatever. So finding the right people for the right roles and engage them in a system that guides them well. This is key to performance of almost any team. Of virtual teams, of remote teams, also of local teams. But in local teams, it usually happens that when they miss clarity about what they do and how they work and so on, then they have many conversations and many meetings. They don't like it, but it's necessary. But they don't fight the symptom. They don't try to introduce more structure and more clarity, but they think that work cannot be done successfully without these conversations and regular meetings. This is simply not true. And then it starts blaming like, okay, this performance marketing guy is not good. He can't manage the team. Try to find somebody else. And when you replaced a person three times, at least then you should reflect on your expectations and maybe you did something wrong by finding wrong people, delegating wrong, giving them the wrong framework. That is what is important to understand, where the problems come from and not finding the fastest and easiest way to blame something.
Yeah, there's so many factors to having an operation run smoothly, isn't there? There's the set of processes, then there's the execution, then there's the iteration and the observation of the existing processes. And right at the top is, I suppose, the strategy and the leadership of this entire operation. And, you know, I like to sort of use the example of, you know, a cheap low-end sales development rep can probably cost about $500 a month. And, you know, they can generate, they fill a lead funnel. Now, you get a sales expert, a sales strategist, and they can maybe, you know, do a consultation for about $50,000 for one day in an office. And the difference there in the value proposition is profound. And so I think it's important to remind clients that, you know, the people that are doing the work aren't necessarily responsible for coming up with the strategy and, you know, figuring out how this operation is going to be built. It's a very different task to you know, the strategizing and the architecture to the actual execution, and then also then the management of that process. Do you sort of involve yourself in all aspects of setting those structures?
Not yet anymore. I did this in the past, but right now we have these clear structures and checklists and frameworks and guidelines how to create, for example, a performance marketing structure. This does not happen by accident, but it's also a clear process. And then you have clearly defined artifacts, like you have branding guidelines, you have communication guidelines, you have the personas, your product, your unique selling point, etc. So these are all things that need to be part of a strategy. If you don't have this framework, then you hire 10 people and you will not only get 10 different strategies, but you will get 10 different formats. And if the strategy is the input for the operations process, and just imagine you get 10 different kinds of strategies, different formats of strategies, then the execution is accident. It just happens randomly. Then the output is something randomly. If you can't measure what you do, you just go blind. And that is what many organizations or managers don't understand. And that's why I absolutely agree with what you said. You need to hire the right people for the right task or for the right responsibility. That is key to success in a local team, but also in a virtual team, and even more in a virtual team.
And if people want to try this, then, you know, and as you say, people are resistant to change. People are naturally skeptical. How do you suggest that people explore this opportunity for their business?
Yeah, start with the thing that really can't fail. Start with, for example, what I tell customers, if they want to transform their organization into a scalable workforce, maybe in a virtual organization, then I don't recommend them to, okay, tomorrow you are a virtual organization. Your business will totally fail because you are changing your culture, you're changing your tools, you're changing people, you change everything so you can build it from scratch. This is not the right way. But what you can do is to tackle the most important challenge is to get your leadership team and your high performance people in the organization on board with the first positive experience. And with the first positive experience, for example, I mean that take your high performers and ask them to work remotely for like a week or even a month. And then see how your managers or your leaders feel about that. They will feel a lack of control because they were used to having a physical presence of their staff every day. And now their people are not physically in the office anymore. So, but they will see that they still deliver if you choose the right people that deliver performance on a continuous basis. So this will bring some kind of positive experience and trust into the system of remote work. And then try to spread this experience in the organization and find others that want to try this. And then you will not always succeed. You will see different problems that appear. But if you are open-minded and you see these problems as an opportunity, then you are on a mindset of continuous improvement towards this vision of a scalable workforce in your organization.
And if people want to embrace this, if people try it, is it about changing everything in the business? Do they, you know, is it about adopting project management software, new tools, or, you know, can you kind of isolate it to just these processes that you suggest?
So tools enable people to do something or something more efficient or something better. But to use a tool to improve something, you first need to understand what you want to do and what you want to improve. So just deploying a tool for something, this can help you for inspiration of what's possible, but it will not solve the problem of you not knowing what you want to do and what you want to get done. So tools are not the first step. The first step is to understand what is your exact goal, either in terms of improvement or of KPIs for your operations, and then understand which roles you need so that this process can be operated reliably. And when you have these roles, you need to find the right people. That's the next step. But then only tools come into play, because with tools, you can do what you always did much better. In other terms, if you have a crappy process and you digitalize it, you have a crappy digital process. So the tool is not the solution to crappy processes.
Incredible. And so if people want to learn more about Bright Solutions or learn more about Flash Hub, what do you suggest they do?
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn, Manuel Pistner is my name. You will find me there. You can also explore flashhub.io or brightsolutions.de, but Bright Solutions is in German. And if you want, you can listen to our podcast about virtual teams, which is also created by a virtual team. The name of the podcast is Virtual Frontier.
Fantastic. And before you go, actually, tell us about your TEDx speaking experience. How was that as an experience?
Yeah, in fact, it was great, because it was completely organized and operated by a virtual team. So I had a virtual team, and this virtual team had the task to find me a TEDx talk. And then they were talking to different people that organize such TEDx talks. And all of a sudden, they got me a talk within a week. And the TEDx talk was 1.5 months in the future, so I had to speed up my preparations. I found somebody who coaches people that give TEDx talks, and this person helped me to prepare. He was sitting in Spain, so also a virtual team that helped me to prepare. And at this event itself, there were 1,200 people, so it was really a large event, but the feedback was amazing, and the atmosphere, you know, you are standing at a red floor, and then you have all these spotlights in your face. You don't even see the audience. Yeah, and then you tell your story, and that was really great experience. I can always recommend this.
That was Manuel Pistner of Bright Solutions and Flash Hub. If you want to get in touch with Manuel or know any more about this episode, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/274. And as always, if you want to ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.